Good morning. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. If this is one of your first times here, or you're just visiting us, there'll be a point later on in the service when you could introduce yourself. And of course, as always, you are welcome here no matter where you are on your spiritual journey or your life journey, if you want to call it that. We encourage you, if you are new, to attend more than one of our services because they are different every Sunday. But you are welcome, no matter where you are on that journey, no matter the color of your skin, the color of your eyes, no matter your abilities or your disabilities, no matter your gender or your sexual orientation, you are welcome here. The opening words are by Greta Crosby. Titled, Winter. Let us not wish away the winter. It is a season to itself, not simply the way to spring. When trees rest, growing no leaves, gathering no light, they let in sky and trace themselves delicately against dawns and sunsets. The clarity and brilliance of the winter sky delight. The loom of fog softens edges, lulls the eyes and ears of the quiet, awakens by risk the unquiet. A low, dark sky can snow, emblem of individuality, liberality, and aggregate power. Snow invites to contemplation and to sport. Winter is a table set with ice and starlight. Winter dark tends to warm light, fire and candle. Winter cold to hugs and huddles. Winter want to gifts and sharing. Winter danger to visions, plans, and common endeavoring. And the zest of narrow escapes. Winter tedium to merrymaking. Let us therefore praise winter, rich in beauty, challenge, and pregnant negativities. Oh, Mary, would you like the challenge, please? Thank you. Flame of fire, spark of the universe that warmed our ancestral hearth. Agent of life and death, symbol of truth and freedom. We strive to understand ourselves and our earthly home. I'm going to begin and end my reflections with readings from Unitarian Universalist Minister Kathleen McTeague. The first one she titles New Year's Day. It's 5 below 0. Too cold to go out, yet you do go into the envelope of light that holds this winter morning. Ice air needles your soft mouth, aches on your teeth. Trees engrave themselves black against the brilliant sky. Then again, blue relief scratched on the sheets of snow. And the thin crust of ice sends a sheen and shattering of sun back into the curve of cloudless sky. On the shoveled walk, the snow creaks beneath your boots. Then you're out in the deep froth of it, hoisting the seed bucket and your awkward body through the stillness, wishing you were lighter, to pass like the blue shadows and leave no sign. When you finish and turn, a chickadee lights, puffed fat against the cold, his black eyes shining, a query of hunger, waiting. Soon you'll go back into the easy warmth where the sun pours gold through the windows and the two lazy cats follow all day from couch to carpet to ottoman. You will sit with them, steam rising from your tea as you watch the birds quarrel and fuss. But now, you stand still in this shine and shadow and note the small drum of your heartbeat. the swirl of ice against your tongue as you breathe. January. The years turn one into the next so swiftly. Your age has come sifting down on you unnoticed, and surely there are more bright beads already threaded for you than await in that glimmering pile the world spills out as it spools around the sun. But the light of this day, the frozen air, the black eye of a small bird waiting, what peace, though time is passing, drifts lightly like a friend's arm settling around your shoulder. As you may know from Prairie Publicity, today's service was originally scheduled for Sunday, December 30th, at which time I was going to weave the subject of resolutions, keeping with the New Year tradition, into my remarks. Well, it's not too late to do that, especially if you tend towards procrastination. But before making too many resolutions or declaring our good intentions for the coming year, I would like us to spend some time considering what we could have done differently in 2018. And by we, I am referring to both the we that makes up this community we call Prairie and to ourselves as individual beings who collectively make Prairie, well, Prairie. We will be handing out some paper and pens soon for you to write a few words or a phrase on this subject. Before we get to the wishing on a star part, I want to briefly mention the elephant in the living room. Maybe it's just a baby, or a lion, or a grumpy monkey, but it is there, and I don't want it to detract from what we do today or to distract us too much. And of course, I'm talking about the fact that I'm leaving Prairie, effective at the end of March. I want this transition time to be as smooth and gentle as it can be. And no, I don't feel awkward discussing what went wrong or what went right or how we got to this point. So I hope that you won't either. It's really important to me. I want us to have frank conversations. I don't want you to feel so awkward that you won't participate freely and openly. The goal is to be honest, open, straightforward in our conversations about how we got to this point in our relationship. Bear in mind that I just began my 7th year as your consulting minister, so we have lots to think about and to contemplate. And I should warn you that I recently saw the movie Mary Poppins Returns. And as a result, I may break into song and or dance at any moment. And there would be nothing wrong with it. You're welcome to do the same. Lightness, laughter, joy, all important in the healing process. So, this Sunday morning time that we spend together is not a therapy session, nor should it be. It can, and I hope it will be, a moment in time that leaves us inspired, challenged, thoughtful, and knowing that we may not be as alone as we often think we are. Being here on Sunday mornings should be a moment in time that you are unlikely to experience in any other setting. You should be able to consider life and death issues here in this space in a way that you would not do anywhere else. For example, as one of the quotes at the top of your order of service says, an unexamined life is not worth living. The next quote picks up on that many centuries later, like a few weeks ago, with this, I have never heard the philosophers talk about the mission of humanity. What the heck is the mission? Good question. What is the mission of humanity? How do we as individuals and a community answer this question and then live out the answer in our daily lives? Paying attention to what worked and what didn't work in the past is one way. Taking time to reflect on what we have learned from our mistakes, and then using that knowledge to make our resolutions for a new year is another way into a way of being that is concerned with the mission of humanity. So we take time to wish upon a star. Our dreams will not necessarily come true when and if we do that wishing. But the more honest we are about what is real, what is important, then the more realistic and reachable our wishing becomes. The author of that second quote at the top of your order of service is Jim Fowler. Some of you will recognize that name. A zoologist, the former host of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, which I don't know if I ever actually watched. Fowler said this during an interview with the New Yorker columnist Nick Pongarden. Fowler, I have never heard the philosophers talk about the mission of humanity. What the heck is it? Pongarden, to ravage the earth? Fowler, no, I've figured it out. It's to create a quality of life for all the people on the planet. The world of nature is not a very pleasant place. Later, Pongarden would consider the possibility that the mission of humanity is to drink gin. At least it may have seemed that way to the bartender who was under siege at this gathering at the Explorers Club to celebrate the half-century-long friendship between Fowler and a man named John Atwater Bradley. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of him. He was an adventurer. I guess it means a lot of things. A management consultant and many things. I have been told that after the November 8, 2016 presidential election, my reflections got darker. I neither deny that nor apologize for it. Anyway, I've been told that after the November 8th, 2016 presidential election, my reflections got darker. And as I said, I neither deny that nor apologize for it. I most definitely went into a funk, which the dictionary tells me means a state of paralyzing fear. A dark place, a spiral downward. And I think that many of you experienced some of this as well in November of 2016. However, I would like to note that over the past 6 months or so, my Sunday morning reflections have not been particularly dark. Occasionally, they may have even been inspiring, I like to think. Why? How have I managed to climb at least a little ways out of the dark place? Well, there were several factors at play, one of which has been because of many of you who have taken the time to listen to me and who share my angst about the state of the world. What is the role of the community then, if anything, when one of its members flounders? And I consider myself to have been a member of this community. What is the role of the church, the faith tradition, this organization, whatever you want to call it, in which we practice Unitarian Universalism? Another factor that has helped me be less depressed is that I have really been trying to look honestly at my actions during the year just ended. Hopefully my last two columns in our monthly newsletter, Prairie Fire, have given you some thoughts about the tools that have helped me and can help you work through and live within difficult times. In December, I wrote about the value and the difficulty of being a non-anxious presence, which is kind of hard to explain what a non-anxious presence is, or maybe it's self-explanatory, I don't know. But being as objective as you can be, and maybe even as unemotional as you can be when you're listening to others. In January, I wrote about living life as a bodhisattva. It's a Buddhist term. Some of you may know it. It's essentially, well, to put it really simply, a Buddhist monk or nun. And I am one. I've told you this story before that unbeknownst to me, I became a bodhisattva when I spent 3 days with the Dalai Lama in the early 2000s. well, me and 300 other people. I guess we took the vows, but a bodhisattva wants to help everyone live up to their highest potential, because the bodhisattva, in this case me, cannot reach nirvana until all the rest of you do. Nirvana. So a bodhisattva strives to practice kindness, compassion, gentleness. A bodhisattva understands the wisdom of giving blessings. And I'm not talking about some supernatural giving of blessings, like God bless you, which is fine too. According to the dictionary, a blessing is approval, encouragement, a thing conducive to happiness or welfare, the act or words of one that blesses, and we all have the power to be blessers. Consider the wisdom of King Solomon. Do you know that story? Where the two women were fighting over a baby. Whose baby was it? Those of you who aren't steeped in the Old and New Testaments, I'm sorry, you're missing a lot. So they go to the king to resolve the dilemma, and what does Solomon say? Cut the baby in half. Give one half to each. And of course, the real mother goes, no, it's fine, go ahead and dance. Yes, King Solomon was wise up to a point, but we don't know what happened next. After he figured out who the real mother was when he threatened to cut that baby in half, what happened next? Did King Solomon feel anything for either of those women? What good is a clever solution that comes without kindness, asks Kathleen McTeague in another of her readings. If this story is going to stand as an example of wisdom, we have to imagine it continuing on past the sword that frightens the truth from a couple of anguished mothers. Whether we are talking about King Solomon's wisdom or the wisdom of adopting new technology, what good is it without kindness? I recently ran across a review of a short film called The Slows. I'm going to read a little bit of the review. It's set in a not too distant future when scientists have rescued the Earth from collapse and solved all humanity's problems to such an extent that reproduction and child rearing no longer drain the species' attention and resources. Freed from sex and diapers, humans pursue their intellectual ambitions unfettered. New generations, called the accelerated, are born in labs and injected with CRISPR-like enzymes so that they speed through the first 18 years of life in a few minutes. People get to do exactly what they want, says the director of this film. There's no disease, there's no scarcity, everyone's peaceful, the environment's perfect. It's basically, she says, Berkeley, 400 years in the future. Or we could say Madison. Only a few hundred of the old humans, the slows, they're called, remain, stubbornly nurturing their squalling young in a remote preserve where they are harangued by accelerated missionaries. Is there kindness in this world, I want to know? Is there compassion? I am beginning to believe that the problems of the world can be solved only by kindness, compassion, gentleness, and blessings. When the Spirit says do, we had better be paying attention. And I believe that the Spirit is always trying, always telling us to be kind, to be mindful, to be compassionate, to be gentle. In the recent, actually it's the current issue of the magazine Mindful, it's the February issue, found this little fact which fascinates me. There has been an explosion of research into self-compassion over the last decade that has shown its benefits for well-being. Self-compassion. How many of you practice self-compassion? Good for you. Physical and mental benefits, yes, but also the development of a stronger ability to rebound when life goes awry, and then to focus on what really matters. Much of this research is concerned with our response to danger. We've all learned this, haven't we? Although I used to think it's also known as the threat defense system. I used to think it was only two things, fight or flee. But there apparently are three: fight, flee, freeze. Easy to remember. And that's all our reptilian brain. This is all in the common culture now. That's reptilian brain. It worked when we were in caves. Sometimes the spirit moves you into sadness, anger, grumpiness, bitterness, into what we humans too often call the dark emotions. But we might need to find a better phrase for these feelings so that we can stop thinking that certain emotions are negative. They're not negative. They are necessary parts of being human, and we need to recognize them. We need to respect those darker feelings and talk about them. Because only by doing this will we feel comfortable enough to look back and consider why we feel this way, so that we can look forward and think about how to use those so-called negative feelings and emotions. We need to look back at 2018 and consider the grumpy times with a more open mind, as well as the angry times and the depressed thoughts and feelings. Some of you might remember a book called The Dance of Anger by Harriet Lerner, subtitled The Woman's Guide to Changing the Patterns of Intimate Relationships. She also wrote The Dance of Fear. But this was many years ago. I want to say maybe even the 70s. So think about that. It takes forever it's difficult for us to get this idea that it's fine to talk about so-called negative emotions into our psyches and to become more commonplace and more accepted. Plus, Lerner's books excluded half of the population. I have been focusing on how we as individuals can become more complete persons by using the tools of kindness, compassion, gentleness, blessings. But being an individual is, of course, only part of who we are. All of us are also a part of many communities, Prairie being the one that matters to us right at this moment. And I would be remiss in these remarks if I did not briefly mention something about congregations that I rediscovered in my preparation for today. Unitarian Universalist minister Roy Phillips wrote a little gem of a book in 1996 titled Transforming Liberal Congregations for the New Millennium. Well, this book is still relevant, I believe. Phillips writes that there are four qualities that people are looking for in a congregation. One, no particular order here, community, that probably doesn't surprise you. Two, individuality. Nice tension there, huh? Three, meaning. And four, hope. Phillips offers these four qualities as a path, a way to move the people in our congregations from membership to ministry, shared ministry. You're all ministers, whether you have someone up here who's a professional or not. To get on that path, I offer you the path of mindfulness, self-compassion, and kindness as a way forward on the path to transforming both yourself and this liberal congregation. Because as I said, I'm beginning to believe that the problems of the world can be solved only by kindness, compassion, gentleness, and the giving of blessings. I'm channeling Mr. Rogers. So I would like to end my remarks with a reading I've used before, quite some time ago. Again from McTeague, How to Give a Blessing. We're asked a dozen times a day, how are you? Most of the time, it's not a real question and doesn't invite a genuine answer. It's more like an alternative hello. And we're well trained in the ritual response, fine, thanks. But every once in a while, we are asked this question when things are really not fine at all. At those times when we're walking around in a little bubble of anxiety or sorrow, Something inside us can suddenly balk at giving out the standard meaningless answer. We are too hungry for an authentic word, too raw to pretend that things are okay. The morning after my father died, writes McTeague, following 3 days and nights of an around-the-clock vigil with my siblings, I had to go to the grocery store to buy a few things for dinner. When I arrived at the checkout counter and the clerk distractedly said, "How are you?" my brain went blank. I couldn't say fine or even okay. I wasn't okay. I wasn't even in my right mind. I was numb, sleep-deprived, and saturated with the mystery of our mortality. That's the only explanation I have, because to my horror, I found myself blurting out a real and honest answer. "I'm not so good," I said. "My dad died last night." With his hands filled with apples, chicken, and bread, the poor clerk turned red and started to stammer. The people behind me looked longingly at the checkout lines they should have chosen, the ones that would not have placed them in earshot of the "too much information" lady. I was mortified at having revealed to an unprepared stranger just how not fine I was. Everyone froze in this moment of uncomfortable paralysis, except the young man bagging the groceries, who had Down syndrome. He stopped moving completely, looked straight at me, and with a little slur and great emphasis said, "I bet you feel really sad about that." Simplicity of that little expression of kindness and solidarity allowed both the clerk and me to escape. "Yes, I do. Thank you," I said to him. And then I was able to walk out with my groceries and not feel quite so much as though I had just undressed in public. I thought about that encounter for a long time. The young man bagging groceries would be considered disabled in thought, speech, and movement if he was the only one able to offer what counted in that particular moment. He knew how to give a blessing. Now, let's see. Orange, would you help, and maybe some others? You're going to do your New Year's resolutions now, whether you want to or not. With you do that. Let me get those out of there. Oh, we have Orange Andy. So with this Unitarian Universalist understanding of what a blessing is, I now invite you to take paper and pen, remember those things, paper and pen? Okay, and write a word or phrase. You can put it on in your little pocket device or your electronic device if you want to, because you might want to save this. You should put down what you might have done differently in the year 2018. It doesn't have to do anything with prayer. It doesn't have to be that. It can be, you know, your own individual thing. Either one, or both, if they tie in together. We aren't going to have a whole lot of time to share these, but we'll share some of them. And then, as I said, if you want to take them with you and ponder them and get them out on January 1st, 2020, and see what happened, if anything. Closing words are by Frank Shulman. "I wish for the doll a little understanding. And for the understanding, a little poetry. I wish a heart for the rich and a little bread for the poor. I wish some love for the lonely and some comfort for the grieved. I wish companionship for those who must spend their evenings alone. I wish contentment for the aged who see the days slipping by too quickly. And I wish dreams for the young. I wish strength for the weak and courage for those who have lost their faith. And I wish we might all be a little kinder to each other. May it be so, all men, blessed be, eat soup, talk to your neighbors, talk to me. Go in peace.